Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Back to Basics. I am once again and always still, despite all efforts to the contrary, I am Pastor Don. And joining me is everybody's favorite co-host, the one, the only, the fantastic Courtney Fraley.
What up?
So we just got through talking about the Tower of Babel. We talked about a bunch of baguettes and then a bunch more baguettes and then, holy crap, a bunch of baguettes. And now we are going to be getting into Genesis chapter 12 today, which is the introduction of our next main character in the story, a young fellow by the name of Abram.
Yep.
Yeah, he's kind of a big deal in that he's considered he's the patriarchal figure of three major world religions, kind of a big deal. Because for those of you who don't know, and if you don't know, I'm kind of surprised you don't, but there are actually a lot of people who don't know this. Both Christianity, Islam, and Judaism all come from these same source texts. Well, really, they all come from Judaism, if we're being honest. Which means that, you know, Abraham is a huge figure for us as Christians. He's a huge figure for the Jews. He's also a huge figure for the Muslims as well. So this is the dude, is what I'm trying to say. So why don't we go ahead and we'll kick off by reading the thing. And because COVID complications, my iPad is not with me at the moment, so I'm going to have to tab over here to read it. So we're going to do, first off, we're going to do the call of Abram, which is chapter 12, verses 1 through 9. And then we'll get to the rest of chapter 12 in the next episode. So for those of you following along at home, cue up your Genesis chapter 12 and let's begin. Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abram took his wife Sarai and his brother's son Lot and all the possessions that they had gathered and the persons whom they had acquired in Haran, and they set forth to go to the land of Canaan. When they had come to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there, he moved on to the hill country on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and invoked the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed on by stages towards the Negev. So there's our passage and the introduction of the main character of the story so far, Abram. What do you think of the guy so far?
Abram and Lot's excellent adventure.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't really have a whole lot of like big character points yet for him here. I mean, I've read my Bible, I know who he is, but like there's just in this, I feel like in this passage is basically the Lord saying, hey, you're special, I'm with you, ride or die. And then he takes off and travels a great deal, and we find out about his stops and the, you know, the most noteworthy thing I feel like is probably to your offspring, I will give this land.
Yeah. And we'll get to that in a minute. I want to first draw your attention. I'm actually going to roll back here a minute to the end of chapter 11, which gives us a little bit of backstory to the end of the baguettes. So Terah was the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran was the one who was the father of Lot. So Lot's dad, Haran, and then you've got Nahor and Abram. Those are the three children of Terah. Now Terah was on his way towards Canaan. So he was going to go there. But when they reached Haran, not to be confused with Haran, they decided to settle there. And that's where Terah and the rest of his sons lived and died. Now, this is something we don't actually talk about a whole lot, is the fact that Abram leaves his father's house, leaves his brothers, Haran and Nahor, and takes his brother's son and leaves to go into Canaan. Like that kind of separation, not super common in those days. Normally only when some sort of break had happened within, like a rift within the family or something like that. Like occasionally—
Is there any indication of whether something like that was the case?
Well, let's talk about traditional interpretations of the character Abram, shall we? There is—
Do we have to? I'm sorry, I'm being a bad student tonight.
No. Fine. Sometimes this stuff can get kind of boring, but I am going to kick it over for a minute because I'm reading out of my big old source text here. But one of the points mentioned here actually kicks it over to the book of Joshua, chapter 24, verses 2 to 3, where Joshua is talking about Abram. And he says that, long ago, your ancestors, Terah and his sons, Abraham, which of course they call him that later, and Nahor lived on the other side of the Euphrates, and they worshiped other gods. Then I, that is God, took your father Abraham from beyond the river and led him through all the land of Canaan and made his offspring many. So that is that part of the book of Joshua. It's a starting point historically for a lot of people who are starting to understand that the reason Abraham left Terah and the others was because of God. Now, I'm going to put a pin in this for a moment because we're going to come back to it. And I want to, without getting too deep into all of the like pages and pages of archaeological and historical information in this text, I want to give you one useful piece of information. Excuse me. Abraham is the first biblical character that we at least kind of can place in history. Like there is still debate over whether Abraham existed or not, as is with pretty much any biblical character up until the mid to late prophets. But unlike say Noah, whose actual like historical date was, I don't know, was an oral history, maybe, who knows. Abraham, the details of his story are a bit fuzzy. Like some of them put it closer to like the 15th to the 16th century, some as late as the 18th century BCE. But the details of Abram's story are enough that he can be historically placed within a time frame and a historical context. Now that's not to say that he wasn't an earlier figure that got juxtaposed into that context, but if we were looking for a time jump between ancient prehistory and stuff we're reasonably sure happened between, you know, 3000 and 0 BCE, you're looking for that time jump between question mark and the chunk of time that the Bible generally takes place in, it probably happened here, somewhere in the Begats from the last chapter. So that is the first point I kind of want to bring up, is that now we get to Abram, we're talking about somebody who probably was real or real adjacent.
Is that your computer or mine?
That's my computer. I apologize.
No problem.
ain't nothing doing about that. So we're dealing with a guy who is, okay, I'm going to pause for a minute. Okay. And I'm going to edit this out. And now I'm going to go again. So we're dealing with a guy who is, for most intents and purposes, a real person. So we scroll back to here, and we're dealing with Abraham, or Abram, as he comes out of his father's house. But his father, here's the question. Was his father a follower of God or not?
I suppose we don't have hard text to say that. That seems like something that might be in more like supplementary Jewish texts. Which, you know, again, we've discussed, we don't know about that stuff.
It comes up a bit in the like the apocryphal text and stuff later on, but it is generally understood that within the historical biblical figures, Abraham is generally thought of as the first monotheist.
Really?
Yes.
What about Noah? Oh, well, again, we're talking about...
Within the historically placed biblical figures.
Okay.
Because we've already established going into Noah that, you know, God does a thing, God steps back, and people are like, well, he's gone, let's start worshiping everybody else. So it's not out of the ordinary to assume that somewhere between the question mark length of time between Noah and Abraham, that people kind of broke off all their own religions. I mean, we have the Tower of Babel long before this, so like people are now in different languages, different cultures, which is, you know, not at all impossible to believe that now people are worshiping different religions. It was generally thought because of the way it's parsed in Jubilees, which is one of the apocryphal books here, that Terah in particular was probably some kind of a natural divinity sort of guy, kind of like a sun worshiper or something like that. Things like that. But there's a passage in Jubilees where Abraham's sitting alone and he's looking at the stars, like, okay, so that's God. And then the daylight comes. Okay, so I guess the stars weren't God. So maybe it's the moon. And he watches the moon, and the moon says, okay, so maybe it's the sun. And then he starts working through these, and then he finally figures out it's something bigger than all that. So this all leads into a much longer interpretation since then that suggests that Abraham was the first person to believe in monotheism rather than kind of a naturalistic polytheism. And so that the separation that sent him further into Canaan had to do with his following of God rather than his father's following of the natural signs and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the kind of general interpretation of who Abram is and why this is kind of happening. But that's kind of backdrop here. So with that in place, What do you notice now that we have some ideas of
who a drink? So you said with that, I'm being quizzed. I didn't ask for that. Hang on, let me get back to the proper passage. I still have it kicked back to 11. Let's see. Well, it kind of casts the beginning of chapter 12, the first few verses, in a bit of a different light. The idea being, once again, God sort of saying, okay, you're my guy.
Yeah.
Which I had mentioned earlier, but it kind of casts it in the light of, like, literally, you're my guy. You're the one who sees me for what I am.
Yeah. So we have this idea here of, to me, it almost feels like rediscovery, if you will, that, you know, you've got centuries, perhaps even millennia of drift from the time of Noah. And now you have Abram, who's kind of rediscovering the creator. Because everybody's gone off, done their own thing, lost touch with the divine, or the creative divine in any case. And now you have God present the whole time. And then all of a sudden this one dude's like, hey, oh, I remember you. And so you have that moment of what feels to me at least, is almost reconnection here. And the minute that connection's established, God starts working through them as God tends to when one connects. So.
As sort of the resident, spiritual player around her too, I'd like to point out that that kind of lines up with a lot of other like paths of spirituality, wherein the idea is you have to have belief in order for something to work.
Yeah. Mm. And I think I forget who it was who put it to me in these terms, but they explained it to me in a way that resonated with me, that the divine is a real thing in the world, and humans are a real thing in the world. But the divine is a lot like a radio signal, to date myself a little bit. And your belief is like an antenna. You can exist just fine without it, But you're not going to be able to connect to that signal without the antenna working. Mm-hmm. So maintaining your ability to believe and to interrogate and to connect with something. Because, and it's worth noting too, that Abram's belief didn't come about by unquestioning adherence to his father's religion. His belief came about by stepping back from that a minute, looking at the universe around him and saying, you know, I think there's something else at work here. I think Dad might not be right about the whole sun, moon, and stars thing. I think there's something else here. Maybe I should look into that. And then physically separating from his father's household and, you know, taking his errant cousin with him. Yeah, or nephew, I mean.
His nephew that he got his weird ideas into his head.
Yeah. He's like, come with me, nephew. I will give you a much more open and accepting house. Things will be better for you. Oh, and can I take my wife with? Yeah, sure. And will things be better for her? Maybe. You know, can't see the future, but, you know, she seems a very salty young lady, but we'll get the hang of it later.
You are a dad. Holy
cow. I am.
Pastor jokes are somehow worse than dad jokes.
Hey, we all got our skill sets. But in any case, like, there is this motion here. It reminds me a lot of my own family, where you've got, like, the one sane, like, interrogative, willing to be accepting uncle. And then you've got the crazy nephew who's not at home with the rest of the family. And then they're like, okay, well, we're just going to leave now and you can come with. Like, that is a familiar dynamic, I think, to a lot of people. And it has biblical origin in the father of all three major faiths. And I think that's an important distinction we often miss with this story, is that, yeah, interrogating the face of your fathers, rediscovering the creator, and then setting off on your own is a holy practice.
This might be kind of going on too much of a tangent, so please stop me if need be, but those sorts of stories always bring to mind, like, the Ten Commandments, you know, honor your father and mother. And I'm like, okay, but, like, there are some distinct examples where, you know, you really probably shouldn't do that.
We'll talk about this a heck of a lot more when we get to the Ten Commandments. Like, what does honor your father and mother mean? Like, I look at Abram here. Terah was originally on course for Canaan. That's where Abram's whole family was supposed to wind up anyway.
Yeah.
And Terah was just like, screw it, I'm tired. I'm going to stop it here. I give up. And Abram, in a very real way, was taking his father as a starting point, expanding upon that, and building out in service of the Creator in a continuation of what his father had originally been called to do.
Who called his father to be on course to Canaan if he wasn't monotheistic?
No idea. It might have been random. It might have been, you know, God working in mysterious ways. Might have been one of his nature gods just happened to be in line with the Almighty. I don't know. That information is not present in the text.
All right. It's my job to ask this kind of stuff.
No, that's fair. That's fair. What I will say is that it casts Abram's motion as an expansion of his father's motion, an extension of it, that he's, like all children do, they start out with the basis of their parents and sort of expand beyond it. So yes, he separated from his father, but he was fulfilling what his father had been actually supposed to do. He was improving upon who his father was. I look at who my kids are, you know, the little balls of crazy that keep interrupting and I have to edit around. You know, I, like every parent, some days I think, oh, cool if they grew up to be just like me. And then I take a step back and I'm like, no, I definitely don't want them to grow up to be just like me. I want them to grow up to be much, much better than me.
Yeah.
And so you don't honor your parents by being the same as your parents. You don't honor your parents by listening to them blindly and doing only what they say. Perhaps when you're like 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 or, you know, the age in which you are within their household trying to learn rules and stuff, some degree of that maybe. But even then, like, you have to disobey in order to honor, if that makes sense. And if it doesn't, I don't care because, well, no one's here to challenge.
And we'll deal with that when we come to it in the text.
Exactly. Problem. We'll come back to the Ten Commandments on that one a little bit. But
so if we pretty much run down this section here.
Mm-hmm.
A quick question, so we're not just ending quite so abruptly.
Yeah.
They talk a lot about building altars to the Lord in various places. This is like a big Old Testament thing. What kind of thing are you looking at there? I always picture like a, you know, like a sort of like stone stacked up sort of situation with maybe like, I don't know.
Yeah, the thing about it is archaeohistorically, not a lot of things from that period have endured, so we can't say for certain. I have always understood them to be, I don't know, not dissimilar from kind of like the neighborhood shrines you'll see here in Japan. You know, just local materials.
Little roadside ones?
Yeah, I guess.
Or more than that.
Well, like you usually, like you ever see in America, they have these... like free libraries, like these little tiny libraries out in the park.
Yeah. It's
about that size, you know, like
not. Okay, yeah, that's about the size I was picturing.
Yeah, basically just like a box on the side of the road type deal. Something like that, but more with stone is kind of how I've always understood it. And then, of course, you know, we'll toss this out here. Here's to end our discussions here. Let's look at the back end here, where they pass into the land of the Canaanites, and the Lord appears to Abraham and says, to your offspring, I will give this land. That's one that's going to come back a couple of times throughout the Old Testament. And
I feel like I brought that one up earlier and we somehow just skimmed right over it.
Yeah, because we had to get into who Abraham was first. We're not going to talk a whole lot about that here because holy God, is that going to be a huge part of the Exodus narrative. When they start stumbling back into Canaan and start, you know, killing basically everybody. It's worth noting that to your offspring, I will give this land. It does not include a secondary line that says, and to their offspring, I will give death. Like, this is something that God is saying, hey, you get to live here too. And right now, we don't get a whole lot of that. Because it's just Abram and his journeys through the land and stuff like that. And he's going to stumble into stuff. And, you know, he doesn't really get to the whole settling in the land part very much for himself. But later down the line, this covenant will come up. You get to live here now. And the Israelites saying, shh, all right, who do we got to kill? Like that interpretive twist, to put it mildly, is going to become a problem later on. But this is where that first promise starts to pop up. This is going to be where you go live. We'll come back to that later on. Anything else you wanted to interrogate here?
No. I think we've nitpicked this chapter quite thoroughly, and it's only the first half.
Yeah. So we're gonna have to get to the second half of that chapter in the next episode.
Right on.
In the meantime, Courtney, tell them what they've won.
Like, share, and subscribe.
Please do the things with the buttons and the sharing and the liking and the subscribing, because they help us to do the things. In the meantime, down below, links to all of the things. If you want to come join our conversations, they're happening in our Discord server all the time. And we would like to see you in there to do more than just listening to us talk. Like, come join us there and be part of the conversation.
You don't want to just listen to us talk all the time.
God, I don't even want to listen to myself talk all the time.
That's a lie. You were a pastor.
Well, anyway. Anyway, in the meantime, I hope you all have a great week. And tune in. We'll see you guys in our next episode. Take care, y'all. All
right. Bye.